This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. I'm so happy to welcome today to Joy on Paper, Michael Keel, and the name of his book is Challenge the Moment. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
I can call you Mike, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, Mike. Well, I was happy. You know, your dad sent me the book a while back, and I get booked up. I'm already booking into June, so I was really happy that I had time and the opportunity to talk to you. And I think actually this is the perfect day to talk to you because we're going into the New Year's, and a lot of people are going to be making all sorts of resolutions and all sorts of plans. And one of the things that they should all be very thoughtful about is to be grateful for what they have. And you have written this book that, you know, it is both heartbreaking and heartwarming because you have faced challenges. And for people who out there think, you know, struggling in the snow is a challenge, they don't know what a challenge is until they read this book. How do you like to talk about it? What do you want? Do you want to tell your story first? What happened to you?
Sure, I could give the nickel quick rundown, which is in itself a pretty short, simple story. I was a sophomore at Penn State, and it's almost 30 years ago now. I'm becoming the old guy, but I was a sophomore at Penn State, and the epitome of health as a rugby player, well, as healthy as a 19-year-old college freshman or sophomore can be anyway. But I was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. Got into an argument with a guy at 4 o'clock in the morning outside of a convenience store, and he pulled out a gun and point blank side of the neck, and I ended up paralyzed from the neck down. And I can only move and feel about as far as I can reach my chin, which is about my collarbone, about my clavicle. But everything below that is numb and immobile. So I use a chair that it's pretty high tech, that I use by tapping my head against the headrest and use a bunch of all kinds of different technology to go to work, get to work, travel, get to life.
One thing over the 30 years, there have been a lot of improvements in things like wheelchairs and software that helps you communicate. And, well, I know that you've dictated your book. So, you know, that has really been a great help to you, and you managed to go to school. There you were, a sophomore. I'm sure at the time it was like, for you, like everything was over. But you faced it in such a brave and courageous way, how you overcame the anger and the hurt.
That's actually one of my favorite parts of the story of the book, because I went through all of those, the grieving process with the anger, the denial, the depression, like all those stages and steps that you sort of need to go through to have a healthy adjustment to something. I went through all of them, and I went through them white hot. When I got shot in April, I spent 2 months in ICU, then I spent 2 months in a rehab center down in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm from Pennsylvania, so they shipped me the whole way down to a really high-end spinal cord rehab center, because I was such an involved case. But I spent 2 months down there, and I was back home somewhere around the middle of August. And this is one of my favorite parts of this story, is after burning through a lot of those intense feelings and emotions, by the time I got home, I was looking for what's next. And I had only been gone 4 months, and I got home on a Wednesday. Friday, two of my fraternity brothers came up to visit. One was my big brother, and one was one of the guys I pledged with. And as we were talking, we realized that all of my professors gave me my grades from the spring. I had a good enough rapport with them, and my grades were good enough. They didn't make me, you know, hold the fact that I missed finals, they didn't hold it against me. So all my grades got turned in, and I that spring term counted. So as far as the computer system knew at Penn State, I was ready. They were waiting for me to schedule classes in the fall. So two fraternity brothers and I, they picked me up out of my chair, threw me in the front of my dad's truck, threw the chair in the back, down to Penn State we went. They put me back together, went into the student services, and I said, how do I do this? And he looked at me and said, "We have no idea. We did it together." Keep in mind, 30 years ago, the ADA was just a brand new, you know, it was about a hot second old. So they didn't know what to do, neither did I. So we worked together and figured it out and got a schedule planned out for the fall term. And these two fraternity brothers picked me up and plopped me back in the truck and the chair back in the back and went over to the fraternity house. And I caught up with all these friends that I hadn't seen in 4 months and filled them in on, you know, what all was involved with my spinal cord injury, like how life was gonna be lived from now on. And at that point, I straight cast every 4 hours, something like that. Which for all your listeners or might not know, it's exactly what it sounds like. You take a tube to go up the urethra and empty the bladder, and it's, you know, usually done by a nurse aide or an attendant or someone that, you know, cares for someone as their job. And I learned all this stuff in rehab. I learned how often I should do this. And, you know, but I remember sitting there thinking, I'm having a couple beers with these guys, and they taught me how to straight cast. They didn't teach me how often to straight cast. If I'm drinking beer, it's probably more often. So I told these guys I had to leave. They wanted to know why, and I'm not shy, so I told them. So 36 hours after I got out of rehab, I'm sitting around with a bunch of fraternity brothers, and they straight cast me into an empty vodka bottle so I can stick around the rest of the evening. And I was back into life.
Wow. Well, it is remarkable. And because when these things happen, so often you hear about people just, well, vegging out. They just don't do anything. And they don't want to do anything. And that you had these wonderful guys who, well, just picked you up and got you going, I think was a little miracle in itself.
Yeah, and the way we can laugh at different things and poke fun at myself and the obstacles that existed and the creative ways we got around it, the ability to laugh at all these things was, you know, that can't be understated. That's the overall theme of this book is pretty much been how much humor has alleviated some of that stress and that sense of overwhelming and overbearing. It's just being able to smile and chuckle even when things are really bad is can't be understated.
And were you like this before? I mean, you were just a funny guy.
I like to think so. I like to laugh before I get hurt. I come from a big family, both sides. My mother and my father's family are big. They're loud and they laugh. And they, you know, they when you welcome each other at the door, there's a hug and a poke at the ribs and a laugh and a chuckle. And, you know, I was lucky. I was very lucky.
Very lucky, because not only so often in these kind of cases, the families also tend to, you know, fall apart and give up. But your family, the story of your father rushing to the hospital just is, you know, again, you read these stories and you write so well. You're such an excellent writer that you really paint the picture for us. And I felt the tension, and I felt your father, and his name is Russ, correct?
Yeah.
And wow, he's a great guy.
Yep, he and my mother both, and my sister, the three of them were there, just whether it was actively there helping me through something or passively in the background just letting me spread my wings and try it on my own. That's, you know, they were there 24/7, you know, 365.
Well, so there you are. You're back in school, and as you said, it's before the ADA. It's before there were computers 30 years ago. I'm trying to remember, but it was a challenge just to do your classwork.
Yeah, one of the best examples is the voice recognition software I use now is called Dragon Naturally Speaking, and I can talk as I'm talking to you right now. And it will type out sentences like that. It'll even, if you if you trust it, it'll add punctuation. Back when I was in college and grad school, it was drag and dictate. And it's just a difference of one or two words, but the version back then was considered discrete speech, which meant it only recognized one word at a time. So I had to write a 130-page paper one time in grad school, one word at a time, and make sure it was all, like, it took a lot of patience.
And certainly taught you the value of each word, which is something sometimes authors, you know, they it takes them a long time to realize that they can say a lot in a little. So the school, your first degree is in what?
Psychology.
And I'm sure that, you know, there was a lot there. Had you planned to do psychology? Was that your original plan, or what were you going to study?
Yeah, actually, I got accepted at my freshman, like entering college, I got accepted at Penn State for architectural engineering because I was a math head. Like, my brain is just wired for math. Math is easy. I just, you know, it just comes naturally. But it wasn't very exciting. It wasn't very fun. So I ended up at the opposite end of the spectrum, playing around with philosophy and psychology. And I had just declared psych my major shortly before I got hurt. And then when I got home from rehab, it was like, all right, I want to understand more about why I was thinking this way or why I think this way now, or that, you know, that grieving process. And, you know, I want to understand more about that.
And
kind of a physician heal thyself.
And then, of course, you went on to get a master's degree. Now, when you're talking to people, and I know that you do reach out, and tell us about the progress of the ADA from the time that you were shot. It's just so hard to think about. Yeah. And, I've had this book for a little while, and during the past few months, as we hear and read about more and more shootings, people being shot in Chicago and Philadelphia, they never follow up with the stories. We hear somebody died and then three people were shot. And so often they never say anything more. They never say, you know, what happened to those people, what they've gone through. So right there from the time 30 years ago, people weren't as aware of rehab situations and what could be done. So tell us this progress over the years.
So that's a really important point to make, because, like I said, the ADA was just passed like the year before I got shot, with, you know, right before. So people were just getting used to it. They're just learning about it. But what the ADA did was it opened doors and it leveled the playing field for people with disabilities to now have access and to take part. And for me, it opened the door and said, all right, we're going to expect you to continue on some way, shape, or form, and do some of the heavy lifting in the labor market. We want you're going to have shared responsibility, because you're going to get shared benefits. You're going to get the respect and inclusion that everyone deserves and should expect. And by way of doing that, you'll do some of the lifting as well by working and contributing to society. Now, the way I'm doing it is working with other young people with disabilities to try to get them, you know, on a career path, get them, you know, job ready and employed. Because that, again, that's another thing that just cannot be understated. And it's what I think is one of the key tenets of the ADA, was to figure out a way to get young people into the job market. And when these young people come through the CTI, the Commonwealth Technical Institute that I work at the Hiram J. Andrews Center, they're learning things that they may have been somewhat good at or had a propensity for, like building maintenance or culinary. They could cook real well, or they could fix things. They're good with their hands, but they were stuck in the classroom and reading out of a book, and now they're playing to their strengths. But, you know, the ADA did that. It opened up here's a way to get employed.
One of the things that I always encourage people is to write a book, because you learn so much about yourself. Writing your book, first of all, is a great help. And also, your story is out there. I love your poetry. There was one particular poem that just sort of hit me right away. I grew up in northern Michigan, and I was a wild child in the forest type of girl. I liked the way you started this poem. All that I see is within a tree. As she reaches towards the sun, her roots below may never show, yet they strengthen where they run. Well, I love poetry, and I think poetry helps so much to put your ideas out there and to share them with people. And so this book, you have lots of poetry. You have wonderful stories about people who have helped you over the years, people who have been there for you. And then some of the sad things that, you know, you've had to go through. I was wondering, you know, you have this book out. Has it received any attention from anybody in Hollywood who's looking to do a movie of the week?
Not yet, but that would be a fun thing to entertain and help out with.
They do these movies of the week, and they're wonderful because they do focus on people like you who have done something really that is miraculous, because you've gone through this in 30 years, you've learned so much, you've done so much to help other people. I want to encourage people to get the book. It's called Challenge the Moment. Mike, when you wrote the book, I'm sure that when you were writing it, that in itself is a challenge, but I liked the funny stories you put in, the challenges, you know, physical challenges, and some of the people that sometimes have not annoyed you. I don't know what should we say. There are times that things haven't gone exactly right.
You know, 99.9% of the time, the people that sort of get in the way or say stupid stuff are just people that, you know, aren't thinking or you know, they're harmless, but they're just really funny. They're really, really funny. So.
Well, I think that you've done this, sharing these stories is great. It will really help people. And you're facing, on the other hand, you know, there are wonderful advances, and it's great that you've been able to, you know, travel more, get out more. How is that working for you?
Oh, I travel a lot. I've been on probably 7 or 8 cruises. I've been to California 6 times, from Pennsylvania. One trip I made, I got an award in Arizona years ago, and I made a trip. I went from Pennsylvania to Virginia to D.C., from D.C. to LAX, LAX to Burbank, Burbank to Scottsdale, Scottsdale to Phoenix, and then Phoenix to Scottsdale, then to D.C., to Virginia to Pennsylvania, from Thursday to Saturday. So I've traveled pretty extensively, and well, within the state, and experienced some really cool things.
Exactly. That's what I wanted you to mention, because it's important that so often when these things happen, people think that life is over, that you can't do anything, but you've certainly proven that you can do a lot and you can have a lot of fun. You are a great example to everybody that life presents its challenges, and it's all in how you face them, because I know a few people who have little challenges, and here you've gone through this and you have the right attitude, and I'm thrilled really that you were able to, you know, join me today on Joy and Paper. What other messages do you have for people? How can they help?
Advice for life, I would say it's embrace the ideology that it's either going to be a good time or a good story, and if you're lucky, both. As far as from a disability advocacy standpoint, give people with disabilities a shot at being included in positions of advice or of consultation, or just an equal load-bearing workload. There's a lot you can learn. And as far as traveling, the more of us that travel, the better the transportation system will get. Because right now you can't even get a wheelchair onto an airplane because it gets stowed as luggage. You know, we've got to try to get more people traveling and seeing the world. When I went back to college at Penn State, there were a couple classes that were on a different floor, and there was no elevator. And the people there being so quick to want to help, you know, would switch the classroom in a heartbeat. You know, that's a whole lot easier to remedy than someone who doesn't understand or doesn't give the time to think about what someone might need to be successful.
Again, I want to mention again your poetry in the book. It is lovely. And I particularly liked also the poem you wrote for your mother, My Mother's Laugh.
That's another one of my favorites. This might make you chuckle. The very first poem I wrote, I sent to my cousin to ask him what he thought about it. And he wrote back that he really liked it. It was great. The iambic pentameter was all stuff. And I wrote back, said, what's an iambic pentameter?
Well, it is a wonderful book. I want people to read it. I just want to get more people to read it.
Thank you.
So you're telling a story that's important here. And I know that people are facing challenges. And I think reading your book will help them to understand the importance of having the right attitude. You suffer, but you still manage to bring joy to people's lives. And I think you've done that with your work, with other, particularly with young people.
Yeah, challenges aren't going to go away. So it's all in how we handle them. They're not going to go away. They'll always be there. There'll always be an obstacle some way, somehow. You've got to get around.
Now, do you have a website?
Yeah, Challenge the Moment is on Facebook, and the book is on Amazon. They can pick it up. Google Challenge the Moment.
Your last name is spelled K-I-E-L.
Yep, K-I-E-L, Kiel.
Okay, well, Michael Kiel, thank you for joining me today on Joy on Paper. I hope that some people will perhaps hear about this and send the idea to somebody in Hollywood. They need to do a film about you because your story is remarkable, as are you, okay?
That would be great. That'd be fun. Thanks, Patsy. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Great talking to you. Okay. Happy New Year to you and your family, and God bless them all. They are wonderful people. Bye-bye.